I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. We've been Disney fans our entire lives. And now, as childless adults, we're undertaking a journey through the media that shaped our lives.
Trying to find out if what made them special is still there.
We are Rewatching the Magic.
Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
As this episode is going up, we are just days away from FumpFest.
FumpFest!
Yep. Was supposed to happen in Chicago this weekend, but due to, you know, it's not going to happen. And it's kind of a bum because, you know, you were supposed to come out for this one, Kiki.
Yeah, I was doing my best to get out for that one, but didn't happen. So
Unfortunately. But the event is still going to happen online, and for more on that, we'll go to our sponsor for the week. The ad right here.
Attention, fans of funny music! FumpFest is back, sort of, due to 2020. This year's FumpFest will be taking place entirely online. So tune in for free from the safety and comfort of your own home. And join us for live performances by Amy Engelhart, Worm Quartet, Carla Olbrich, and Devo Spice. Plus, dumb parody ideas and the 10th annual Logan Whitehurst Memorial Award for Excellence in Comedy Music. Tune in Saturday, August 29th, beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. For links and additional information, including how to participate in dumb parody ideas, visit FumpFest.com. FumpFest. Hey, somebody had to do it.
3, 2, 1. Sorry.
And we're back.
Boy, that is a good ad.
Yeah. Like they got a professional voice actor for that or something.
Yeah, I don't know where they'd find one of those in that group.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, FumpFest this weekend.
Yeah, we'll be there online.
Yeah, we'll be there because we were the judges, or two of the judges for the Logan Awards. Definitely looking forward to seeing which of the nominees will win.
And don't ask us because we don't even know.
We don't know. We just said, we just gave our picks and that's it.
We just voted.
Yeah, so anyway, let's move on. This weekend also very special because this weekend is your birthday.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and that's kind of the whole point of this episode because, ma'am, you put your foot down and said that we're going to review something that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, we've never done that before on the show at all. None of these picks have been things I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
No, and, but this is one of the ones we did talk about early when we talked about cartoon series we wanted to do. This came up for both of us very quickly.
And that will be X-Men the Animated Series, the old 90s show from the old Fox Kids days. Ah, Fox Kids. Back in the days of Batman, the Animated Series, and X-Men, and Tiny Toon Adventures, and Animaniacs, and Digimon, and that Power Rangers.
everything all this is new again, and in fact, we are getting more Animaniacs soon.
Yeah, on Hulu.
Yeah.
Which is weird. And because apparently HBO Max was not yet a thing when that deal was made.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. Cannot wait to see it. We'll get that before the end of the year. I can't remember exactly when. I think November maybe or something.
Sounds about right.
So there were two massive influences on a kid who was little in the early 90s, as we were. Mm-hmm. And one was the Disney Afternoon. Mm-hmm. And one was the Fox Kids Network.
Mm-hmm.
And now Disney pretty much owns just all of it.
Yeah.
It's just one behemoth of nonsense there.
As we say, but, eventually everything will be owned by Disney.
Yeah. But it does give us a good excuse to talk about one of my favorite cartoons on a show we otherwise wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
But yeah, now on Disney Plus, Disney is really hyping not only the Marvel stuff in general, but also X-Men.
Yeah, they've been really pushing forward the X-Men movies since buying Fox, they now own those movies.
Yeah, and it might be that the X-Men and the idea of mutants might now be folded into the MCU. We're kind of waiting to see how that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the big reasons why they went forward with the Inhumans in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was because they couldn't use the mutants because of that deal with Fox.
Yeah, they used Inhumans on S.H.I.E.L.D. and then the Inhuman series. They could never say the M word.
Miracles. They're miracles.
And they could not use it in the MCU films, which is why Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver are now not mutants and not Magneto's children.
Yeah.
Which they should be because they are. X-Men is a thing that, while I do not claim to be the X-Men authority, X-Men is very close to my heart. It was kind of what got me into comic books as I want to know more, and I kind of want to collect it. My favorite superhero of all time is Rogue. So this was my introduction to Rogue, this cartoon. And to X-Men in general, and not entirely to the Marvel Comics universe, because I grew up watching Incredible Hulk, and there were some Spider-Man cartoons and things like that. Of course, I grew up watching reruns of the 60s Adam West Batman. But this was kind of the thing that clicked in my brain that comics were not just silly, jokey stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, it could be, for lack of a better term, soap opera-like storytelling.
And on a rewatch, boy, is this a soap opera.
This, we kind of talked about this with Gargoyles, but this was one of the first attempts of a mainstream cartoon to have continuous storytelling. Every episode led into the next episode.
And honestly, I had forgotten that. When I chose the episodes for this, I was like, well, a lot of the early part is set up, but it seems like the final storyline starts here. And I was a bit wrong in that, because the storyline starts in episode one and keeps going. So,
There's an entire memes based off the previously on X-Men.
Yeah, and you needed that in case you missed an episode, which was a thing that it was possible to do in the 90s. If you weren't there when it aired, you missed it unless you were lucky enough to have a VHS that had a time recorder.
Yeah.
Which I did not for a while. So... you know, it was very important to me to, like, be home on the day at the time. Do not mess with me while I'm watching this.
On Saturday morning watching that.
Was this one a Saturday morning, or was this one a...
This was a Saturday morning cartoon.
Okay. My memories are so weird that I can never remember what was Saturday morning and what was after school.
I know they did redo reruns for after school, and I remember this was so big that they actually, for the season premiere, had a primetime special for it.
Yeah. I do want to mention kind of the first thing they tried to do to get X-Men on TV, which was in 1989, they did a pilot called Pride of the X-Men that was about Kitty Pryde and her finding the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to have this on VHS. This is not on Disney Plus as of now. You might be able to find it on YouTube or something. I honestly haven't checked. Mm-hmm. But I used to have a VHS of this. And it starts with the funniest opening narration, which is Stan Lee absolutely terrifying you about the idea of mutants. Like, he sounds like an anti-mutant radical. He's like, "Hello, true believers. They could be anywhere. They could be your brother or your sister. They could even be you, mutants. Look out for them." And then it starts the X-Men. I'm like, are they the good guys or the bad guys? Am I supposed to, like, grab a torch and pitchfork? What do you want me to feel here, Stan?
And it wasn't even the last time, because those characters showed up in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends quite a bit. I mean, these exact characters from that special. And they're, yeah, you know, having an Australian Wolverine 30 years before it actually happened.
Yeah, that seems like a weird time travel moment. Because what we used to make fun of it watching that as a kid, you know, and like a teen and stuff. We'd be like, why is Wolverine Australian? And then, like, it happened. Except, you know, Hugh Jackman can actually do a Canadian-American something accent there pretty
Imagine
well.
Imagine if they had given Wolverine the stereotypical good day accent in that special.
That would have been very weird. The interesting thing about the X-Men cartoon series is that pretty much all of the cast is Canadian.
Yeah, this was animated in Canada. Or, well, most of the voice actors were in Canada originally.
Yeah.
A lot of these old Saban shows did a lot of their dubbing in Canada.
Yeah, we really won't get into the cast much, because most of them, this is probably the thing you know them best for. Most of them were decent working voice actors, but not the kind of household names, even if you follow voice acting. I kind of hate to say it. I don't mean to sell them short, because I think this is actually an incredible voice cast. For the main show here. One of the guys, the guy who was the original voice of Gambit, you know from a few things, most notably from Kung Fu, The Legend Continues.
Chris Potter.
Yeah, Chris Potter on there. The original voice of Storm, Iona Morris, is Phil Morris's sister. They were both in the original Star Trek series episode called Miri that has all the little kids in it. Phil has worked with Disney before. You probably know him from Atlantis Lost Empire as Dr. Joshua Strongbear Sweet. There's that. And he's also in a lot of other things. He shows up in Kim Possible a lot. So he's got some good Disney cred there. Was even in Wolverine and the X-Men. So he's got some X-Men as well. I think it's, we mentioned that most of them were Canadian, mm-hmm. and the voice of Rogue actually is now a Canadian MP, Lenore Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
So she serves in the Canadian Parliament now. And the one that I kind of knew at the time, the one voice I kind of recognized, is the voice of Jean Grey, Catherine Disher, because she was on one of my favorite vampire shows in all of history, Forever Night, which was a great 90s Canadian vampire drama, you know, one of those, like, and they solve crime things. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they want to do that. Please stop doing that. I don't like my supernatural stuff being mixed with and they solve crime. stop mixing police stuff with really cool supernatural things, because I hate my supernatural stuff being stopped for, like, police dramas, which I loathe. So it's like two great tastes that go awful together, in my opinion. She was one of the main characters, not a vampire, but one of the main characters on that show, and I absolutely adore her. She has unfortunately since stopped acting because she had a run-in with a stalker. Ooh. And it scared her so badly that she doesn't really act anymore. And I hate that for her, because she was a good actress and she deserved better, and nobody deserves to be stalked ever.
Yeah.
So
don't love your fans, love your celebrities, but you know, boundaries, people, boundaries.
Yeah, please respect the distance there and their, you know, physical space and physical safety. And anyway,
I mentioned that this was produced by Saban Entertainment, the same company that produced Power Rangers and did the dubs of anime like Digimon, and the Saban Entertainment Group, that's that company, was eventually bought by Disney in 2001. And this is when they bought, around the time they bought ABC, around the time that they bought ABC Family, which was owned by Fox at the time. And this is how X-Men and Spider-Man ended up being aired on the Disney networks. So essentially, Disney was buying Marvel before they bought Marvel, and they bought Fox before they bought Fox.
Yeah, it's very, very strange the way that some of these things ended up in Disney hands.
Yeah, and this because is how also, we are. Yeah, I'm saying this is also how Disney got acquired Power Rangers for a bit.
Yeah, we are so used to right now thinking of, you know, giant conglomerate whatever just owns all the things, whether it's Disney or, you know, we've still got Sony still kicking over there for refusing to do, you know. But we're sort of used to just this one group owns all of these things. And we're kind of quickly forgetting that that didn't used to be the way.
Yeah, again, this 20 years ago, all of this stuff was separate.
You know, yeah, it's, you've got Saban doing, you know, Spider-Man stuff, and then you've got Fox doing X-Men stuff, and they're both Marvel, but they're being done by completely different corporations. They really don't have anything to do with each other. If you ended up with one or two properties that you could mix together, you might get a crossover, but, you know.
Yeah, and there was that was an X-Men Spider-Man crossover.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember they made a big deal out of that episode.
But I want to mention, since you mentioned that this, the connection there with Power Rangers, there's another connection there with Power Rangers. And that is Ron Wasserman.
Yes, Ron Wasserman, who did the theme song and a bunch of the interstellar musics for Power Rangers, wrote and recorded the classic X-Men theme song. That's him. He wrote that song.
The coolest thing about that theme song is the last time anybody tried to make an X-Men TV show was The Gifted on Fox, which I liked, and then it got canceled, like everything I like. But one of the funny things is, in the first episode, one of the characters, their phone rings, and their ringtone is that theme song. And apparently it was a huge fight of them trying to get the rights to the theme song, and is it, you know, the network was saying, no, that's too cheesy, and they're like, no, we have to do it. You know, because that show was the best, and we're building off of what they built.
Pay Disney for that song.
Well, Disney did not own that yet. So they were still dealing with a different group, I believe, at the time. But anyway, this is one of the greatest TV themes in all of history.
Yeah, I mean, there have been people who, when Sony did Spider-Man Homecoming and you got that instrumental orchestral theme version of the Spider-Man 60s theme song, and people were automatically, you know, making their own versions of the X-Men, this 90s X-Men theme song, like, if X-Men was in the MCU, this is what it would sound like. And like, yeah, yeah, Disney, if you're going to do X-Men in the MCU, do your Marvel logo to that song.
Yeah, bring back this song. This song needs to be like a giant orchestral sweeping score. When I first got a cell phone that had programmable ringtones or downloadable ringtones, this was my first downloadable ringtone for a cell phone ever, was the X-Men theme. Really bad chiptune too, like done with like the dial pad tones, you know, so it was it barely sounded like it, but I was so happy.
And this show was so popular that when they eventually did the Marvel versus Capcom games, they brought back the cast from this show to do the voices for the characters. It's like when you hear Rogue say "Power Drain," it's the same actor. Or Cyclops saying "Optic Blast," it's the same actor. Or Berserker Barrage, that's Wolverine, that's from this show. It's like that's how influential this show was, that Capcom said, "We need the 90s TV show cast to record these lines for this game."
Well, up until what was like 2000, 2001 or something, when the X-Men theatrical film came out.
Yeah.
This was it for the X-Men for us.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they sounded like. That's what they acted like. That's
to
what,
this day,
you know,
when I read an X-Men comic, these are the voices I hear in my head.
Oh, absolutely. The interesting thing about it, though, was that unlike, and I'm about to anger a lot of people, I think, unlike the theatrical film, which had the misfortune of coming out right at the time where people were starting to consider movies, comic book movies, as a thing they might be willing to go see. But they hadn't fully shaken off the, like, this is goofy kid stuff things.
Yeah.
The movie tried to distance itself from the comic book nature of the thing.
Yeah, that big line from the trailer, what do you expect, yellow spandex?
Yeah.
Yes, I expected yellow spandex.
Funny thing, and I hope she won't mind me telling on her, but our friend Sydney, who was with us for the Gargoyles episode, my favorite memory of her is being in the theater together watching that movie for the first time, and that line came up, and Sydney screamed, "They're unstable molecules!" And I thought, yeah. That's your comic fan right there. But, yeah, that was the thing, is that, you know, they tried to downplay the comic book nature of the comic book movie, which I hated. Don't put them in black leather. I want colorful outfits, you know? Storm.
We didn't even get that until Age of Apocalypse movie. And that was at the end of the movie, and we never got any toys of that, and we probably never will.
Yeah. Well, also, that was just such a bad movie. They're all bad movies. I mean, they're all bad movies. Let's just face it. We have yet to have a good X-Men movie. I'm hoping we will one day. But what I love about this cartoon, and think of the time it came out. You know, we talked before about how Gargoyles and Batman the Animated Series, and this is kind of the third in that triumvirate, I guess, of shows that started to say, we can talk to kids about important issues and expect that they'll understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so this show got into so many like social issues, you know, for those of you who scream about like, oh, now comics are doing social issues. Congratulations, you never understood comics. Marvel Comics especially was always doing social issues, especially X-Men, which was supposed to be about civil rights.
Like
racism.
Daredevil said in the movie, an allegory for civil rights in the 60s.
Yeah. In this show alone, you get sort of metaphors for a lot of things. You deal directly with racism. That one's pretty obvious. The Holocaust and genocide is another big obvious one because of Magneto and his, you know, his origin story and being a Holocaust survivor. But you also get things like the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
Because at one point, some mutants come down with a disease that people are wondering, like, are mutants going to spread this disease to us? I mean, it's a really clear allegory to an adult. But, you know, also it dealt with, like, Rogue's sadness over not having human contact. It dealt with Cyclops and Jean Grey's romance and difficulty. In one of the episodes we watched for today, Jean Grey talks about if we have children, they're going to be mutants and they're going to have to deal with prejudice. And do we want to bring them into that?
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Which is huge for a kids show in the 90s. That's not a thing you talk about on 90s kids TV. So I liked that it took the colorful comic book nature and the silly premise of like superpowered people and time travel and all the other weird stuff they brought into it, but used it to tell really important things to kids.
And I think even it's with this show being almost 30 years old, there's still some relevancy with a lot of those topics. That you can still show people these episodes and they can still get the message.
Well, I mean, let's get into the ones we're talking about today. A lot of these, another reason I picked these episodes is because most of these storylines have also been dealt with in the movies. So even if you never got the chance to watch this series or you haven't seen it in so long, you don't really remember it. The basic plot lines you would know if you've seen the modern theatrical stuff. So we start with an episode called The Cure, which is Rogue going to Muir Island, which is a research station in Scotland, because she has been told that there is a doctor there who can cure mutant powers. And if you remember, we did see this in one of the movies as well, with Rogue going to ask if they can cure us.
Rogue's power is that if she touches someone, she takes their energy. So she literally she cannot have any kind of contact with anyone.
Yeah. And this episode is also the first time in the TV series we get Rogue's backstory as to how she discovered her mutant powers. Mutant powers in the comics generally express during puberty. So there's another metaphor for you. Oh no, my body is changing and I'm scared of it and I don't quite know what it's doing. she kisses a boy. She kisses her first boyfriend, her very first kiss. Poor Cody, and he falls over and is in a permanent coma after that. They don't really say it in the show, but if you know the comics, the story is that he's kind of just been in a coma since that kiss. Almost died, they pulled him out of it, but the best they got was Coma. So.
And her family pretty much disowns her. I mean, we don't see it in this episode, but there are other episodes where you see that, you know, her family straight up disowns her right after that, and she runs away.
Yeah. Unlike in the comic and in the film, though, there is no cure put forward. It turns out to be a hoax that Apocalypse is trying to lure in disaffected mutants so that he can brainwash them and turn them into his slaves in his quest to destroy the world.
The Four Horsemen. Which one is Ric Flair?
I don't know. Is there a fall over, cut your head and bleed on everything horseman? Because that would be Ric Flair.
Yes, I know it's the biblical Four Horsemen, listeners. I'm making a joke.
But yeah, so I like that there is no cure in this version of the story.
Yeah, it all being a ruse actually worked. And again, in the comics and the movies, the cure is a real thing. And and it works on the hope of other mutants. You know, yes, there are mutants that can pass for human or powers that aren't that dangerous. And then you see other mutants that, we see mutants even in earlier episodes that their mutations changes their bodies. They don't look human. They look, you know, people look at them and calling them monsters. Beast, for example.
Yeah, Beast later will meet Nightcrawler. You know, there are others in there that they'll never be able to live among human society without being obviously different.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a meme about this that comes from the movie, because in the movie version, Rogue says, "Is it true? Can they cure us?" And Storm, like, immediately is like, "There's nothing to cure. We're perfect." And people are like, "Yeah," says the girl that can make rain clouds to the girl that can never touch another human being as long as she lives.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Storm realized that you got the better, you know. Storm is worshipped as a goddess in parts of Africa. Rogue can never touch human skin. Like,
yeah.
Like, there's a vast difference there. And we see that, at least one of the people that Apocalypse ends up enslaving actually, like, can't touch any living thing without it dying. Plants or animals or humans.
Pestilence,
I mean, just,
yeah.
Yeah, any living thing she touches. And we had seen her earlier in the series, and she's a Morlock.
One of the Morlock. Yeah, she's one of the Morlocks.
Yeah. So there are those who, you know, yeah, Rogue eventually, as she always kind of does in whatever permutation of this story you watch, Rogue eventually decides that her power can do more good for humans, so she makes the sacrifice in order to help the world.
Well, especially in this episode, if she had given up her powers, Jean be dead, because she fell off a cliff.
Of course, Jean would have immediately come back to life. It's fine. Jean Grey dies all the time. Who cares anymore? but yeah, she realizes that, oh, if I didn't have the power of flight and... Rogue can fly. They couldn't do that in the... Well, I think they could have. They would have just had to have bought the rights to Ms. Marvel.
Well, they could have just pulled... I mean, they had her have the white hair from Magneto. They could have just said she flew with magnetism like Magneto can.
Yeah, I really hate what they did to Rogue story in those movies. I want written apologies from everyone involved in that. Except Anna Paquin, who has refused to ever play the character again unless they let her be actual Rogue instead of movie version Rogue. But, you know, she got those powers from,
Carol Danvers.
Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And now that Captain Marvel's in the MCU and the X-Men are in the MCU, I'm really, really hoping that we might be able to do this story correctly. But I kind of hate that in the 20-minute format, you don't really get her wrestling with that choice more. Because it's always been a big part of Rogue's character.
They could have, but they wanted to have their Saturday morning action cartoon, you know?
Yeah. If I have any complaint about this series is that each episode is only 21 minutes, and you really feel we're pushed for time, and also they want us to have an action scene at least once per episode. But that leads directly into Come the Apocalypse, where we really start seeing Apocalypse and his plan. Although, once again, it's in a kind of truncated version because 21 minutes, where Apocalypse has his slaves now. He turns them into the Four Horsemen of Apocalypse and attacks a peace conference, which the X-Men have to go, save.
Yeah, one of the characters, Angel, which we kind of skipped over him. We see him at the beginning of the previous episode, and he's the first to take the cure because Angel's powers, he has these big wings coming out of his back, and he just wants to be normal. And we see that, once his girlfriend finds out he's a mutant, she shoots him.
Well, she didn't shoot him because he was mutant. She heard Warren is gone. She had her eyes closed, and she shot him by mistake.
But from his perspective, his girlfriend shot him.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I've never understood about Warren Worthington III. You're super rich. You're super hot. And your mutation is you have really pretty angel wings. What is the problem, my dude?
You can freaking fly.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you're really hot, you're really rich, you've got very pretty wings, and you can take me on a flight over the city? Like, yes, please, I would date all of that. I don't know who wouldn't. So, yeah, I've never understood his, oh my god, I've got to take the cure thing, but in every version of this story, he's one of the first to be like, I desperately need the cure, get rid of these awful wings. And everybody else is like, you're pretty, can I touch your wings?
And thus becomes Archangel or Death, depending on which version you want to go with.
Yeah. Rogue ends up saving him by using her power. She absorbs enough. Well, yeah, she absorbs enough of his energy that it kind of breaks the brainwashing. Yeah. However that worked, it weakens him enough that he's able to break through that. And so it's kind of how they become friends, and Angel turns back to the side of the X-Men and helps defeat Apocalypse at the moment. And Apocalypse scurries away to come back and bother us later. But then, the next two episodes are, I think, one of the better episodes of the series.
A little pause here because Disney Plus has these episodes in the wrong order.
Oh, yes, we do have to talk about that.
Because the next episode on Disney Plus is The Unstoppable Juggernaut. Oh, it's the Juggernaut! I can't finish that line.
No. Yeah. Let's not. Yeah, Disney Plus has these out of order. Unstoppable Juggernaut should be the episode just before The Cure. Instead, they put it after Come the Apocalypse. I don't know why. There's some suggestion that maybe it originally aired out of order because it wasn't finished, but if you watch the previously on X-Men, you can see that it absolutely comes right after Slave Island and right before The Cure in the runtime. So if you watch it on Disney Plus,
they are rebuilding the X-Mansion that was destroyed in the Juggernaut episode.
Yeah, at the end of Unstoppable Juggernaut, the mansion is destroyed, and the most of the team is rebuilding it at the beginning of The Cure. Anyway, but moving on to the episodes we're meant to talk about, the ones that are supposed to be in the correct order, we have a two-parter, which is Days of Future Past. This was also made into a movie.
Yeah. Only, again, we don't have Kitty Pryde, and we don't have Wolverine going back in time either.
Yeah, they change it to Bishop.
Yeah.
Which I really like. And honestly, for the longest time, I didn't know it wasn't supposed to be Bishop. I just always assumed, because so many of these episodes are much more faithful to the comics than any other version of X-Men has ever been. But yeah, Days of Future Past is one of the kind of seminal X-Men stories from the comics. It's really good in this series, and then it became a really bad movie. Like, really, really bad movie. Just so bad.
I mean, the general idea, depending on, you know, regardless of which version you're, whether it's a comic book, cartoon, or movie, it's something happened in the modern day that has caused this devastating future that's terrible for mutants. They're hunted, they're put in concentration camps, or internment camps, as they're called in the show, because you can't say the other word, because it was 90s Fox Kids censorship.
Yeah.
But
they do also, they do just say termination camps. They actually straight up say, like, they're murdering mutants.
Yeah. So they go back in time to try to stop this event from happening, and depending on which version you're watching, they either succeed or fail.
Yeah. This one is interesting in that they both succeed and fail.
Yes, this particular version.
Yeah, this particular version for the TV series, it kind of ends in that. The future is the entire world is controlled by Sentinels. Sentinels seem to be the government somehow. We don't know at the beginning of the show how this happens. We see it from older Wolverine, his
old man Logan.
Old man Logan. And he is brought in by Bishop, who they kind of combine with a character or two from the comic series to kind of get this version of Bishop. But this version of Bishop is a hunter, basically, who goes out to find rebel mutants who are fighting the Sentinels. And he thinks, as all collaborators do, that this will prevent him from running afoul of the Sentinels and ending up in a camp and ending up killed. And he learns
very quickly that, like all collaborators, they will turn on you the moment you've outlived your usefulness.
Yeah. Don't collaborate, kids. It's a bad idea. And so they say that Bishop has met his quota. They don't need him anymore, and he's going to be sent off to die along with Wolverine. They fight their way back from this, and Wolverine takes him back to the Rebel headquarters, where they have a time machine that has been built by Forge. I love Forge as a character. He's basically a mutant whose power is, if he can think of a machine, he can build it. This has always made me wonder, if Forge can basically build anything he can think of, why doesn't he just think of a machine to let Rogue control her power? I realize that takes all the pathos away from Rogue. Like, I understand writing-wise why you wouldn't, but, like, man, they need to come up with a reason why he can't do that, because, like, I have wondered that for my entire life.
Or at least something that can control the power. Like, you can press a button, powers on, press a button, powers off.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they have those the slave collars in Genosha that we see earlier in this series that take away mutant powers. Why could he not modify one of those to let Rogue control it? Anyway.
And he can make it look like a fancy bracelet.
Yeah. I don't know why, you know, I was like... Anyway.
Moving on.
But we get kind of a funny Marvel shout out here, as when Bishop ends up back in the 90s through the time machine, he hears some people walk by talking about their new video game they got called Assassin, and the character on the cover of the Assassin video game is the Punisher.
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. All Bishop knows going back, because his brain gets scrambled in the time machine,
time travel isn't perfect, apparently.
Yeah. There is going to be an assassination of someone important, and one of the X-Men is the assassin. So he comes back to try to figure this out. He eventually remembers that it is Gambit will be the assassin, and everybody just seems to go with this. Here's the one thing about the first season of this show. The X-Men kind of hate each other.
Yeah, they're not exactly friends.
They're not really a team. Like, they work together, but you don't really get the sense that they're, like, you know.
There's a nice little shout-out to events that hasn't happened yet, where Jean says, "Even I have a dark side, don't you remember?" It's like, that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
Implied that it did happen. You know, it's like, they're not sure where they're following the comics here.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, though, is that you see this in The Cure, where they're rebuilding the mansion, and they are just, like, Wolverine and Gambit get into a fight, and, like, not like they're buddies, they're wrestling around, it's a play fight. Like, no, like a I'm going to slice you up kind of fight.
And the constant fight between Wolverine and Cyclops over Jean.
Yeah, which they start really early in the show. And Rogue absolutely kind of hates Gambit at that point. Like, Gambit is really into her, and she's like, no.
Gambit's he's a little aggressive with his feelings. He's a little pushy with the feelings. Like, there's been times throughout the show, even in this first season, that Rogue has shown that she does have some affection towards Gambit. It's that she cannot allow herself to be close to anyone because of her power.
Yeah, and she frequently says, he's constantly saying, "Give me a kiss," and she's like, "Do you want to end up in a coma? Do you like?" And that's the good option. The bad option is very dead. Bishop is now getting his memories slowly back, and he says that Gambit is going to assassinate Senator Kelly, who is about to announce his run for president. You will remember Senator Kelly because he is the same Senator Kelly from the first X-Men movie. They get rid of Senator Kelly real quick in the movie.
Yeah, they could have done so much more with that character. They could have done so much more with that character.
Yeah, Senator Kelly is a really good antagonist for the X-Men comic and throughout this cartoon even.
I mean, yeah, how do you fight, you know, a human with superpowers? Well, he has political powers. He's this big anti-mutant politician that could really already makes promises before he's even announced his candidacy. Saying, you know, if I'm elected president, we're going to do this mutant internment camp. We're going to push
all
of this.
We're going to build a wall, and we're going to make the mutants pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. If this series has any relevance to modern day, that's a pretty big part of it. Mm-hmm. He's been one of the people behind getting the Sentinel program started, along with Trask, who is also in the films, at one point played wonderfully by Peter Dinklage in the awful, awful Days of Future Past movie. Trask kind of invents and builds the Sentinels, and Senator Kelly is the political power that gets the government to really fund them. So they have to head to Washington because, one, Professor X has to testify in front of Congress that mutants are not a threat, but also they know that at least one mutant probably is a threat and is trying to kill Senator Kelly.
Yeah.
It turns out, though, to be Mystique.
Which we kind of skipped over here, but Mystique, who has been helping Apocalypse this whole time.
Yeah, this is still connected to the Apocalypse storyline in the show in that Apocalypse figures, if they murder Senator Kelly, he knows then that it will give them the, you know, martyr to rally around for the humans. The humans will then persecute the mutants. The mutants will fight back, and it will give both humans and mutants, quote, the future they deserve. And seeing as how Apocalypse hates all living things, pretty much.
And, of course, we get, been Mystique disguised as Gambit saying, this is what you get when you mess with the X-Men, especially the one known as Gambit, making it very obvious, like, I am framing Gambit for this murder.
Yeah, and she specifically leaves a witness.
Yes.
She wants there to be, you know, this woman who works for Senator Kelly to witness it and hears that it is Gambit, it is the X-Men. So this is a very obvious frame job that is unfortunately interrupted by the real Gambit.
Yeah.
Who has one of the greatest entrance lines ever. Surprised to see me? I know I am. Like, such a good line. But we also get a big reveal, which has not been talked about in the TV show up until this point. Rogue comes in to save Gambit. They don't know which Gambit is the real one. So she tells Cyclops and Jean Grey to get the senator away, and she'll take care of figuring out which Gambit, right?
I mean, if anyone could find a way to figure out who the real Gambit is, it would be Rogue.
Yeah, kiss me. The real Gambit would just run for it. Like, everybody else would have the sense to be like, I don't think so. The real Gambit would take that in a heartbeat. But, yeah, then discovers it is Mystique. Discovers that the one that is still... Bishop shoots one, so he ends up shooting the real Gambit, who is out for the count for the rest of this scene. The one left standing is Mystique, who reveals to Rogue that she's her mama.
Or her adopted mama.
Well, yeah, I was getting to that. Rogue upset
over, we kind of skipped that, but Rogue upset over Bishop shooting Gambit kind of takes his time machine and breaks it.
Oh yeah, that's bye bye Bishop. Yeah,
Bishop is immediately sent once his time watch is destroyed. He's immediately sent back to the future.
Yeah, and we'll get back to that in just a second. But Rogue suddenly, and I kind of hate how quick this is dropped into the story, because this is such a large part of Rogue's backstory. Except in the comics, Rogue absolutely knows that Mystique was the one who took her in, because she used to be part of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. But in the TV version, she was taken in by a woman she thought was human and raised after her real family kicked her out. And then at one point she ran away. We're not really sure yet in the series why she ran away. But she did. And Mystique tells her that not only was she that woman, but that she joined Apocalypse and tried to get Rogue to come work for Apocalypse because she's been trying to find a way to get Rogue back. And out of affection for basically the woman who helped raise her for a while, she carries Mystique away from the scene and lets her go.
Yeah, definitely playing up sympathies there. Mystique clearly playing up Any symbols of love that Rogue may still have for her.
Yeah, and the problem is that, you know, it kind of comes back to play again with Nightcrawler. That Mystique is really in it for herself, but she does play on the emotions of those that she's taken in.
Mm-hmm.
And been a mother figure or literal mother in some cases too.
And yeah. Also, we get a little after Kaylee's life was saved, he kind of has a bit of a change of heart. Not a huge one, but a big one.
We got to deal with the X-Man that is Sir not appearing in most of these episodes. Because they did a very weird thing in the first season. It is that in the opening episode, Beast gets arrested. And spends the entire first season in jail.
And he could have escaped any time because of his power. We see him bending jail bars, or he could have easily escaped if he wanted to, but he's gonna serve his time.
He wants to show the humans that mutants respect their laws and will live among them and all that, even though he's completely innocent and Yeah. Apparently, they were going to do this with a different character, but then they realized that the way Beast speaks and his intelligence and stuff would make for a really good courtroom drama scene with, like, a big Atticus Finch kind of speech. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did. Senator Kelly starts talking about we gotta be nice to mutants again. And then we flash forward to the future. And we see Bishop ending up back in the future with Forge. And the future is still messed up. It's still the same future. And he says, but I stopped the assassination. Everything's okay now. And he's like, something else must have happened.
And they don't mention it, but we see an adamantium skeleton with claws out.
In a Bacta tank.
I don't think Wolverine made it.
Actually, I do think Wolverine made it. I think it's just going to take him a while to regenerate. In the comics, it seems to be that as long as the skeleton has protected the brain will regenerate the rest of the body.
Oh, yeah, so he's not dead, he's just going to be sleeping for a while.
Yeah, like I said, it looks like he's in a Bacta tank. Like, I think they're just waiting for Wolverine to regenerate. Otherwise, why keep the skeleton? Why would you not bury it? Fun fact, there is one point in the comics where you find out that Professor X has a secret file of how to neutralize any one of the X-Men in case they turn evil. And Wolverine's just reads, sever head from body, bury head and body at least 3 feet away from each other at all times.
So he's Batman trying to take out the Justice League.
Yeah. It's a contingency plan, but I did like that was that Wolverine will come back in any other situation other than that. Back in the past, we discover that Senator Kelly has been snatched from his office by a Sentinel, and we get our big cliffhanger leading into the final decision, which is the last episode of the season, where you find out that Trask has decided that he will not take Senator Kelly messing with his plan of mutant suppression. So he's brought Senator Kelly to Master Mold, which is the giant robot that makes Sentinels. I've always found Master Mold really weird.
A giant Sentinel that makes smaller Sentinels.
Which are also giant compared to humans.
Yeah.
Because Sentinels are supposed to be like 10, 12 feet tall, and then Master Mold is like 30 feet tall or something like that.
It's like a human holding an action figure.
Yeah, it's very strange. But Master Mold kind of has its own brain. It's its own AI.
Yeah.
But as soon as Kelly gets there, Master Mold starts turning out sentinels that no longer take... They no longer take instructions from Trask. And Master Mold has decided that, I'm just going to run the show now. And we discover that this is how we end up with the All Sentinel government.
Protect humans from mutants. And then they decided, well, mutants are human, so the biggest threat to humanity itself, so robots should take over.
Yeah, which is, of course, logical, because mutants are human. They're just a slight variant of human. Again, racism allegory. but...
We kind of skipped over Magneto's part in the story, though.
Yeah, Magneto just shows up at the very end. That's right, he...
He was the one that kidnapped Senator Kelly.
He was the one that kidnapped Senator Kelly. I'm sorry, my brain today. He pulls Senator Kelly out of the Capitol and kidnaps him, and then the Sentinels take Senator Kelly from Magneto. There's a bit of a exchange there. But the Sentinels almost kill Magneto. And you find out that the new version of Sentinels are made out of plastic specifically to get around Magneto's powers. Because the first Sentinels were very weak when it came to Magneto. But these are all space-age polymer Sentinels, so now Magneto has to fight using other methods. And the Sentinels almost kill Magneto. The X-Men rescue him.
And they find out where is Trask located? They don't know, so they go and search Gambit's mind, because Gambit was, like you said, he was on that island with the collar on his neck.
Yeah, Genosha, the mutant slave island in this story.
We get another cameo, brief cameo of
Ghost Rider.
Yeah, Ghost Rider.
And I'm not really sure why Ghost Rider... in here, to be honest.
I think they just wanted to have that little cameo in there. Probably a reference to some comic storyline we're not thinking about.
Maybe. But
I do love when they're scanning his mind. One of the most prominent thoughts in his mind is of Rogue.
Yeah.
Just looking at him. Like that's the big memory of him is this Rogue winked at me once.
I do like how Cerebro is used throughout this, because Cerebro is basically just a mind scanner that can put your thoughts on TV.
We need that in real life, especially with people who can't get their words out properly. Just put a thing on their head and their thoughts will just be on the TV and everything will be fine.
Yeah. I'm not sure I want people privy to some of my thoughts. I like having the filter between the brain and the mouth.
You can just do that for like every politician on Earth. Is put the thing on their brain, and then what they really want is shown on TV, and we'll actually figure out who's the right person to run governments.
Man, that'd be great. But speaking of politicians,
yes.
Master Mold has decided that it's going to steal a bunch of politicians from around the world and put robot brains in them.
So they can follow command. Yeah, follow orders.
The X-Men show up and start to fight the Sentinels and Master Mold. Trask realizes, oh my god, what have I done? And fights back. Alongside the X-Men, Senator Kelly is basically useless, as he is in all versions of this story, but they get him out. The X-Men escape, and Magneto shows up, even though he thinks the X-Men are kind of ridiculous and self-sacrificing. He thinks they're going to die if they go up against the Sentinels, but he shows up anyway to help. Good for Magneto. But the only problem is that while they end up killing all the smaller Sentinels in a giant explosion, Master Mold survived it. So how are we going to get rid of Master Mold? Well, Professor X decides to fly the jet, which is for some reason filled with a bunch of explosives, directly into Master Mold, killing it.
Jet fuel. That's an explosive right there.
Well, yeah, but I have a feeling that, like, they may have come extra prepared. But yeah, he sets the jet directly into a collision course and ejects just before it hits, and they are able to save him as he parachutes safely down. Magneto even helps save some of the X-Men from an explosion.
Yep.
Good for Magneto. But Kelly now has decided that, yes, some mutants are scary, but some mutants are good, and we can't let our, you know, correct desire to have justice for the ones that misuse their powers overtake our compassion for the ones that are, you know, just trying to be good citizens.
And that's like everything, you know, we can't let the bad ones ruin the good ones.
Yeah, you can go after criminals without demonizing an entire population. Wow, I wonder what that's a metaphor for.
I know, right? It's almost like that you can, again, that these cartoons made in the 90s are still relevant today.
Don't you wish they weren't?
Oh, yeah.
Kelly calls off the entire anti-mutant campaign. Beast is let out of prison, as Kelly was kind of one of the big ones advocating for him to be locked up. Everything is happy. Cyclops proposes to Jean Grey, and she does have that little bit about if we get married, if we have children, they're going to be mutants. Do we want to do that to them? I mean, yeah, Kelly has stepped down and seen the error of his ways, but there's still a lot of anti-mutant sentiment. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that is one of the most difficult questions humans have to ask themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that a good human, a reasonable human, will have that conversation with themselves and with their partner, I guess, if they're doing it that way, before bringing a child into the world.
But they're not exactly alone in that little picnic, are they?
No! Somehow, something that calls itself Sinister is watching them on a TV screen.
Who is this sinister man, this Mr. Sinister? You have to watch the next season to find out.
Yeah. I love the setting up for the second season there at the end. But I also like how, even though it ends on a happy note, even before the reveal of Mr. Sinister, we've already got that ethical dilemma.
Yeah.
Does this
mutant couple have a mutant child or not? You know, are they going to...
Yeah.
You know, that's a big question. I mean, that's a question that every couple, like you said, that's a question that every couple should ask themselves.
Yeah.
Is it wise to bring another life into this world?
Yeah. Even if it's not the you know... Here it's a direct allegory for racism, of course. But even if not, there are other things to consider, you know?
illnesses, health issues.
Illness, health issues, you know, there's a thing of not that you are not disabled because necessarily of your own health, but because society has not made a place for you in it. It's kind of what I believe. My health is not great, but I could do a lot more in the world if there were just some minor changes to society to allow me to do that. Ironically, many of those changes have been happening because of the pandemic. Being able to work from home, for instance, and things like that.
Contactless delivery. Stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, there's just a lot of minor things that it's like, yeah, they're good right now. And I hope we keep some of them as options for those who have needed them all along. But, you know, going back to X-Men, the thing I like about X-Men is that it understands that things can be better, but not great. That there's still work needed to be done.
Yeah.
And I
it's
think
it's not going to be a miracle. I mean, we're not going to wake up one day and then everyone treats each other fairly.
Yeah, you can defeat Senator Kelly. You can defeat a Sentinel. But what are you going to do about anti-mutant sentiment? You going to go around and punch everyone in the face that doesn't like mutants? I mean, that's just going to make more people not like mutants. You know, it's a difficult thing. It's a long way to go. And of course, we've seen the same thing in the real world with mm-hmm. various issues. There is no, you know, yes, you can take away a poor leader, but that doesn't mean all the problems that were there before are going to go away, and maybe you should be ready to keep working on them even if that leader is removed. Just going to say that. That might be a thing that happens to be important in the near future, we hope.
Yeah. well, one more thing I want to talk about. Let's talk about this really bad CG end credits scene for the X-Men cartoon.
For the first, like, 8 or 9 episodes. It's not through the entire first season, but for
I think it was, but for the versions that are on Disney Plus, they did change them up.
No, I actually looked this up in my research of when did they stop using it. When they made this show, the network really wanted them to use this new computer animation thing that they were hearing so much about, you know, to get the kids.
I mean, Beast Wars was on at the time, and they were or a reboot, you know, stuff they were using CG at the time.
Yeah, and it was kind of the new thing, but of course this was early CG, so those shows look very bad. And honestly, even at the time, they looked very bad. But the thing is that it wasn't really cost effective, and they wanted it to look like the comics. And the CG wasn't good enough to really look like the comics. So the end credits for the first part of the first season had at the end a little static computer rendered model. It didn't move. It just looked like a rendering of an action figure that would show the character, and it would spin around 360 to show you the costume. And then underneath it would have a little file that would tell you their name, you know, Wolverine, healing factor, adamantium skeleton, has claws from his hands, you know. And they would do that for every character except Jubilee.
By the time they got to Jubilee, all the credits are over. We can't tell you anything about Jubilee. We don't even see her CG model.
Yeah, they did make it, and it was in, like, one episode, I think. But then after that, yeah, it was the credits went by too fast. But then, seeing this, some other power that be at the network decided that it looked too much like an action figure, and they didn't want parents to think that this was a 20-minute long toy commercial like Transformers. So they changed it to be like the just some random clips from the show at the end. So it does kind of change in the middle. But that I had forgotten how goofy that those CG models look.
But yeah, X-Men the Animated Series still holds up to me, honestly. The animation hasn't really. I mean, there's still some janky animation. There's some scenes where some characters look really really freaked out. Like, you see Professor X on the TV communicating with the X-Men, and he has these really weird... His eyes are drawn really weird, like he's on some sort of substance.
Yeah, I have a feeling that some of the animators couldn't quite get the model correct. But the one thing that I will say about the visual look of this show, I absolutely love the visual look of the show, except for the costume Jean Grey is in. I do not like them picking this particular version of the Jean Grey costume for the series.
And I'm pretty sure they based the costume off what they were wearing at the time in the comics.
Well, yes, I understand that. It's still not a good costume in the comics or the cartoon. It's not my favorite Jean Grey because she's got the weird, like,
flesh-colored attire.
Yeah, it's like most of the costume is the same color as her flesh, which makes it look like she's wearing like a really weird bathing suit. So half the time you're like, is she naked? Oh, no, right, that's a costume. And then she's got the hood thing that frames her face and then does her hair into like a shock on top and then like one little tiny ponytail whip in the back, and I hate that.
They couldn't give her the Phoenix costume because that hadn't happened yet, even though, again, they referenced that it happened, but it didn't happen yet.
But there were other costumes they could have drawn from other than that one. She eventually does get the Phoenix costume, and it looks much better, but this kind of opening one, and even as a kid, I was like, everyone looks so cool. I wish I had a costume that looked like Rogue's. I wish I looked like Jubilee. I wish I had Storm's, you know, really cool cape wing things. I do not want to dress like Jean Grey at all. I wish Mystique has a really cool dress. I just absolutely hated that as a kid. I was like, oh, Jean, I kind of like you, but your fashion sense is awful. And then she gets the Phoenix outfit, and that's cool. I like every version of the Phoenix outfit they show in the show. But I do want to mention some things I noticed as an adult that I don't think I noticed as a kid. Mm-hmm. One, this is very, very, very soap opera-y. And not just in the writing and the previously on and the connected stories, that I'm fine with, but like every bit of acting in this show is like, but Professor, do you think that Magneto would do that? Dum dum dum. You know, it's like, it's so overdramatic, and it just, I'm sure that's how they directed the actors, because every one of the actors does that. Rogue a little less, and I think it was because the actress is trying to do the southern accent, and I'm not sure she really knew how to do both. But it gives it kind of a weird feeling. The other one is this show is so rushed, and I don't really fault the show. They had a 21-minute runtime. You can only do so much, especially when like 4 or 5 of those minutes per episode has to be a action scene by network directive. But it does mean that a lot of character moments are shoved aside. You know, Rogue goes to get a cure, and then the X-Men shows up, and she's like, oh yeah, I've decided it doesn't matter. You know, it's resolved in like 20 seconds. So that those are things that I wish could be done better. But the thing is I loved watching this again.
Yeah.
This is such a sweet little, like, that's my childhood, you know? I think if it came on now, I'd be a little bit harsher about it, but knowing what it was and what it represented at the time and how groundbreaking it was in several areas, I think I'm a little kinder on it.
If it was done today, you know, I think the animation would be a little bit more consistent. And
I think they would let the actors be a little more natural and, in their speech.
You know, we've seen cartoons in the modern day that really don't shy away from more mature storylines. So having more true to comic storylines like The Cure, like The Phoenix Saga or anything else would still have that dramatic oomph that these original episodes did.
Yeah, and I think now it might have a little less requirement to have the prolonged action scenes, that some episodes might just be allowed to be non-action,
mm-hmm.
Which I think would have helped the show a little bit. I like the action scenes. They're actually very well done.
A little more slice of life.
Yeah, but a little more character, because the cool thing about the X-Men to me was never so much their powers, because a lot of them, you know, oh, he can heal and she can lift things with her brain and that girl does weather and stuff. You know, you can see that in a lot of different things. But I always thought that what made Marvel Comics in general, but especially the X-Men, was the deep dive into the character psyche. Because so many of the X-Men storylines in the comics are just kind of the emotional lives and social lives of these characters. And I wish the series had gotten to show that more, but I think for what they were working with, and especially at the time, they really pushed it forward so much. I think they started pushing it forward. I think Batman the Animated Series really took it the next step in a big way. And then I think everything that came after that built off of these two.
Yeah.
Which I like. So, yeah, there's magic here to answer the big
question of the show. Definitely magic here. And there's been talk of bringing this show back. There's been some talk that the original producers of the show has met with Disney with an attempt to bring the show back for Disney Plus. And the rumor has even reached to Leonora Zahn, who did Rogue. And yes, even though she is a politician, yes, she has her job, she has said that she can still do the voice and would come back to play Rogue if asked.
I would love that, because she has been my favorite Rogue. You know, cheesy accent and everything. I really do think that her version of it was the best we've seen yet. If they do, I really hope they can convince Catherine Disher to come back. I would understand if she didn't, but she's so good.
Yeah. So if they were to do something in the X-Men 90s universe, would you want them to pick up where they left off, or would you want them to do a time jump?
Well, the series proper, I mean, spoilers for 30-year-old TV, but the series proper kind of ends with Professor X's body giving out and the some of the members of one of the alien races, is it the Kree or the, I forget
Shi'ar Empire.
Which one. Shi'ar, yeah. But taking his body so that they can keep him alive, but it does mean that he will have to leave Earth and he will not see the X-Men again. that's a pretty easy thing to come back from. You know? Either the X-Men have to go to him, and you have some stuff off-world, which some of the later episodes do, and I think they do it very well. So you could do that for like a pickup series, or you could have, you know, maybe Shear technology found a cure or something for whatever was ailing him, and he
30 years later
comes back. Yeah. I would like to see them do a little bit better with Jubilee if they come back, because Jubilee always kind of got the...
Well, she was supposed to be the kid. I mean, and they kind of do something in this, in the last episode where she even straights up, you know, what have I been training for? You know, you always treat me like a kid. I'm ready for this. And they kind of cop out on that.
Yeah. But the thing is that in the 30 years since, we kind of have learned how to write kids in this scenario. You know,
take a look at it, like Steven Universe or Adventure Time.
Yeah. So there's no reason you couldn't borrow some of the lessons we've learned from that and make Jubilee kind of a more well-rounded character. I do think that in the 90s, we had a really bad time of cartoons being like, it's an awesome team of superheroes and the kid, you know?
Well, it was a kid's show, so I guess, you know, you needed a... Same thing with Pride of the X-Men, where you needed a younger member to kind of introduce the kids into this world.
Yeah, but if you're going to have a viewpoint character for the audience, respect that viewpoint character.
Yeah.
The audience, I think, likes to feel like, I'm just learning about this world, but I could be part of this world if only I had the chance. I'm not sure that you know, because I was about the same, well, a little bit younger than Jubilee is supposed to be in this show when it started. But, there's nothing like seeing, like, here's a cool team. And if you were there, people would call you a silly kid and tell you to go away, that you're not ready to do anything. No, it doesn't matter if you have mutant powers. You still don't get to do anything.
Personally, so, I would love if they just did a straight up new series for the X-Men. Again, now they have that opportunity to do so. Now that Disney has all of the rights to all these characters again, just do a new X-Men series.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't really care what you do, what format you do it in. I don't care if it's animation. I don't care if it's live action. I don't care if it's a feature film, a TV show. What? Just do Rogue correctly, please. That's all I care about.
We're going to get Brie Larson laid up in a hospital bed in one of these movies.
You know what? I don't have anything against Brie Larson, and I did like Captain Marvel, but if it means I get good Rogue... And by the way, we do get Captain Marvel back in the storyline. That they eventually restore her. It's fine, eventually, after like 20 years. It's okay, it's fine. She can come back later.
She did continue being a superhero even without her power, so that's you can do an entire movie of Carol still trying to be a hero even without superpowers.
Which I think would be awesome. I mean, look at what happened with Coulson. You know, yeah. It's like, it's a whole bunch of superpowered things. We want a TV show about, like, the one guy that doesn't have any powers and is just the power of Snark. That'd be great. Thanks. Can it run 7 seasons and be super awesome? Thanks.
Yeah, so I think that's all we can really talk about with X-Men the Animated Series right now. So
I could talk more, but...
We could,
everybody has things to do. I know you gotta go make dinner or go to work or whatever you do when you're listening to this nonsense.
I mean, we can do an 8-hour X-Men the Animated Series podcast if you guys want to listen to
this. This is now just a podcast about my love of X-Men.
So let's again, thumbs up, definitely still has the magic. That's the final, the final verdict.
Yeah, if for some reason you missed it, either it was like before your time or after your time, or you just didn't see it for some reason, go look at this, man. I think you'll still have a good time.
Yeah, you got 5 seasons of really good storylines, classic X-Men stories told in this format. It's actually really good. If you haven't seen it,
yeah
Disney
close to
Plus.
The comics. Yeah,
Disney Plus. Go watch it. So let's move on to what we are going to do next week. We are going to head back to the land of Lucasfilm, which we haven't done since we talked about Star Wars. And yes, Lucasfilm did do movies that were not Star Wars or Indiana Jones. We are going to be talking about everyone talks about big movies like The Lord of the Rings or big shows like Game of Thrones. But before all of that, before any Lord of the Rings movies ever was in theaters, live action anyway, we had Willow. And we're going to talk about Willow. Warwick Davis. We're going to talk about that next week.
Nobody cares about Val Kilmer. It's Warwick Davis all the time.
Exactly. Let's talk about, the guy that started as that playing an Ewok and ended up playing this little dwarf guy.
Yeah. And
then he played a banker.
I love me some Warwick Davis. This is going to be fun. I have not seen this movie since I was a kid.
Yeah, I haven't seen this movie in a long time, but it's good to find it. It's going to be good to go back to this movie and talk about it. So, everyone, tune in next week. We'll be talking about Willow. And I think that is all we can do right now. So, again, check us out on all of our places, Twitter, Facebook, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else where you can get podcasts at. Please give us a positive review. We could really use one.
Yeah, tune in this weekend to FunFest.
Yes, definitely. Tune in this weekend for FunFest.
Absolutely free.
Free.
Don't have to pay a thing. Just sit back and watch some funny.
Yep. And because we all need some lightheartedness in our lives, especially now. So if you just want to forget about your problems for a few hours, tune in and watch some people make you laugh. FunFest this weekend. Definitely check it out. And until then, so next time we speak, we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Rewatching the Magic. We invite you to keep the magic going by joining the conversation online. Find us on Facebook at Rewatching the Magic, on Twitter at Rewatch the Magic, and of course, find all new episodes at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Until next time, remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.